And good morning, and thank you for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY and the morning show on this beautiful Wednesday morning, April 13th. And this is the morning show. We're live here in the studios with our guests and your host, Susie Prez.
And I'm your co-host, Chris Bessler. Good morning, Susie.
Good morning.
And we do indeed have our guests here. They are the candidates for the Bonner County Commission District 3 race, so the Republican candidates. That is the only contested race in the primary, which means that actually the primary is going to be the deciding vote for this county commission seat. Mm-hmm. And the candidates are Dan McDonald. Say hello, Dan.
How you doing?
And Louis Rich.
Good morning.
Yeah, and thank you both for being here. I'm going to throw in right here that this is the first of five Wednesday morning shows. We're going to be interviewing candidates for the different contested primary races, and we'll run through that list a little bit later, but we're, of course, hoping folks will find these interviews with the candidates informative.
And they can always listen another time on our website at krfy.org, because we do podcast these.
Yes, we do record these, and they're available as podcasts. Anybody with a computer can go hear them at any time.
We've done this for, I think, the last election series, too. And I found it very helpful to be able to just hear in a casual way from the people that are running, how they feel, what they're thinking, and things like that. So it's a very helpful thing.
Yeah, I hope we're trying to make it that way.
Anyways, let's hear about the weather first from the National Weather Service. It is currently 45 degrees out. We have a 50% chance of showers today with a high of 56. And mostly cloudy. We'll have some light winds in the afternoon and very little rain, about a tenth of an inch possible. Tonight, 90% chance of rain after 11 p.m., lows 37. And tomorrow night, about 80 to 50% chance of precipitation, high tomorrow 51 and low 37. That's on Thursday.
So that's a little more typical of our spring weather, cooler and rainy.
But I see this little bit of sunshine showing on the Saturday and Sunday, high 71, just to give you a little bit of encouragement.
Okay, too. That sounds nice. Also going on outside, sunrise this morning was at 5:58 a.m. Sunset will be at 7:34 p.m. And over the course of the last week, we've picked up 24 hours of sunlight per day as we're getting closer to the spring. The summer solstice now. So our days are definitely getting longer. On the river scene, the Priest River, the rivers are flowing now with spring runoff. Priest River is at 4,280 CFS this morning. It's up from about 3,600 a week ago. Moye has risen as well. A week ago, it was at 1,500 CFS. It's at now 2,380 CFS. So for people that like whitewater, those rivers are now happening. On the lake, it's the lake level is at 2053.95 feet this morning. It's up 1.42 feet in the past week. So the lake level is coming as they're beginning to fill the lake with some of this runoff that we're getting. It's projected to rise about an 0.8 of a foot in the next week. It will continue to rise each week now until we get to early summer, when it'll be at full pool level.
So we can't really put our kayaks in at City Beach yet.
Well, sure you can. You just got to drag them a little farther.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Up on the mountain, Schweitzer closed for the year Sunday. It was a beautiful last weekend. Great spring skiing with warm, sunny temperatures. They had good snow, actually, right through to the end of the season. But there's some concern about the snowpack right now. It's been near normal for the county drainages, but we've been having these unseasonably warm nights. It's not just the days, but the nights have been well above freezing for the past couple of weeks, and that's reducing the snowpack at a much faster rate than normal, which we need that snowpack for later in the summer when the stream flows begin to decline. So hopefully, actually, we want a little cooler weather, at least up high.
Okay.
And that's what's happening outside.
Okay. I was just thinking when you were talking about the snowpack and the water levels and that it's evaporating or melting faster because of the warm nights. Who regulates our thought about that, and who says eventually you know, that we might have to be careful with our water use and things like that?
The USGS, the U.S. Geological mm-hmm. Survey, and there's some other federal agencies that are involved in that. And they actually pay a lot of attention to stream flows mm-hmm. because it's very important for agriculture, for hydroelectricity, and for the biological health of the rivers as well. So there actually is quite a lot of information you can find online that will tell you what the water forecast is for the year.
Well, I know one thing. We're very fortunate to have good water here. Mm-hmm. It's clean. We have the Clark Fork River coming through that's, you know, fairly unpolluted, and that's a good thing.
First thing I miss when I leave town is the water quality.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Actually, I miss the water quality when I come into town. I have a hard time with the city's water. We have a wonderful well. It's 428 feet deep, yeah. Artesian. It's unbelievable. And you come in here and you get a glass of water, it's like, bleh.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. Our city water compared to a lot of places is still pretty good. So it's all relative.
Relative, yeah.
I have a well also on my residence. But, yeah, the city water, comparative to other cities, be it even Coeur d'Alene, much better.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So let's jump into today's topic. Again, we are with the Bonner County Commission District 3 Republican candidates, Dan McDonald and Louis Rich. And we're going to start out this with a kind of an open mic here for you gentlemen. If I'd like to give you a minute to 2 minutes each to tell us a little bit about your background and why you're running for county commissioner. Louis, you want to go first?
Sure. First of all, I'm married to the same woman for 49 years. Got three grandkids from two children that I do my best to spoil because that's the job of a grandparent. Lived here in Bonner County since 1980, so almost 36 years. I have intimate knowledge of Bonner County economics, having run a small business successfully for almost 29 years. I'm currently a commissioner at Northside Fire and have been in that position for, I believe, 12 years now. I've got cumulative years of volunteer service within the City of Sandpoint Fire Department and Northside Fire Department of over 50 years combined. And also involved with Bonner County Sheriff Search and Rescue for many years. So I'm dedicated to this community. I understand the economics of the community. I'm running because I really have some concerns about the current and the previous boards as far as decisions they have made that have been very disruptive. We are now involved in a humongous amount, as far as I've ever seen, and I use that to describe my history of what I know, of wrongful termination suits, and none of them make sense to me, and I do know enough about all of them informationally to say we're going to lose. And that concerns me when that happens, especially with the termination of employees with considerable years of service within the county, that procedures apparently were not followed. These terminations were wrong, and we're going to spend a lot of money and possibly lead the county to a place of not being insurable. That's kind of it in a nutshell for me.
Okay. Thank you, Louis. Dan McDonald, can you give us a little introduction to you? Tell us why you're running. And
sure. My background, I'm a grandfather as well. I've been married 33 years this July 30th, a date I never forget for my own safety. Father of three, grandfather of four and counting. Hopefully my youngest son will get it together, but we can only hope. My background is I've been in the roofing industry in several different capacities over the last, 38 years. Started out actually as a laborer and worked my way up to where I was vice president and general manager of a roofing company that I took from $1 million a year, a little over $1 million a year, to about $15 million a year. I was recruited by a company that told me I could live anywhere I wanted. Well, my wife's family is all from here. My wife wasn't born here. She was born in California, but her parents were born here, and we have a big chunk of family property out in Sunnyside. And the first time they brought me up here when we were dating and I came across the Long Bridge, I went, oh my gosh, I got to live here. You know, we were living in the Napa Valley, which is not an ugly place either. Mm-hmm. But I realized this is what I wanted. I've always been a big fan of mountains and trees and water. And so I finally got the job offer. They said, listen, it's a fallow territory. You'll have to build it yourself. And basically the way the company works, you function as your own franchise. So you run your own business within their business. So started here in 1996 and built this business up. To the point now where I'm tired of driving 60,000 miles a year. I've accumulated a lot of skills, not just in running businesses, but also in problem solving. And I think that's what's key to the commissioner's seat, is to be able to actually solve problems, solve issues, not just pay the bills, but actually go out and look for those issues and figure out creative solutions. I manage anywhere from probably 50 to 60 projects a year. And I work for U of I, State of Idaho, DPW, Avista. I do all of Avista's work. I do a lot of school district work. So I've got a background in not only budgeting, but also implementation and project management. But the biggest thing, I think the most important thing is my ability to find creative solutions. I'm not the kind of guy that says, no, we can't do that. I'm the kind of guy that says, okay, let's figure out a way to do this. Other things in the community, I was the president of the Panada Theater for quite a few years. I've done a lot of different charitable things in the community, and we can go into that later if you want. But I've been extremely active in the community because I embraced the lifestyle here. I embraced the culture here.
Okay, great. Well, thank you both for coming in once again. And actually, thank you for even running for office. It can be a thankless job. I know that. So I want to launch into what I think is probably the hot button issue right now. And you already alluded to it, Louie. And that is what's going on with the county planning department. And I'm going to give a little framework for what's going on for people that may not be aware at all. But the county commissioners have been acted in ways to curtail the decision making of the Bonner County Planning Commission. That's the group of volunteers that serve as planning commissioners. And they have discharged former planning director Claire Marley and senior planner Dan Carlson. Both of those are now in the process of suing the county for wrongful termination. Also, the former city planning director Jeremy Grimm, this is kind of a side thing, has filed a tort claim against the county concerning a planning issue. Additionally, the unpaid volunteer planning commission chairman Steve Temple resigned in February, asking the county commissioners to, quote, respect the structure of the planning and zoning processes found in local and state land use codes, quote. So my question to you two candidates would be, do you feel the county commissioners are on the right course as concerns to the actions they've been taking with the planning, with the county planning department and the planning commission, and why? And Louis, do you want to jump in on that?
Sure. I served two terms previously as county commissioner, was involved even as the chairman of the county commission involving the comprehensive plan. We basically plagiarized a lot of different counties across the Northwest with similar growth areas like we have and similar characteristics to the economy. And I'm sure that a relook would be something that I would definitely support, because there's things that we may have overlooked that we need to put in and things that are in there that need to be taken away. But when the board, who has the ultimate authority to change any of those things, and then ask the planning and zoning and also the advisory board take those into consideration and does it backwards and tells them, basically, if you don't do it this way, you're going to be gone, which is the biggest basis of the wrongful termination suits by Claire Marley and Dan Carlson, and ultimately Steve Temple, and also basically kicks in the teeth, and I use that with purpose, to really discredit the advisory board in that particular consideration for planning and zoning. That puts all of our advisory boards, which there are many that I utilized a lot, because there's no way that I can see everything. There's always going to be viewpoints that I've not considered, things and issues I've not considered, and conditions that I've not considered. And that those advisory committees gave me the ability to hear those things before I rendered a decision. This board's done it backwards, and the previous board has too.
Okay. Dan, same question to you. Do you feel the county commissioners are on the right course as concerns the planning department and the planning commission?
Sure. Let's start with, if you only read what was in the B, you would certainly think they're on the wrong course. You would think that these suits are justifiable. I actually went in and spoke with the commissioners individually and asked them, listen, is there a valid case here? Do you have the justification for termination? They said, absolutely. We've got recordings, transcripts, witnesses, the whole nine yards. I think once this goes to court, we're going to find a completely different story than what's been published in the B. I think if you have a situation where we have elected officials who are elected for their vision, and then we have county employees who choose to not carry out that vision in a rambunctious way, let's just say, then there's an issue. We're not going to move forward. With respect to the comprehensive plan and the planning and zoning board, you can actually look at the comprehensive plan and draw a lot of direct correlations between the issues we're having in Bonner County with unemployment. Unemployment's about 7.3%. Again, it moved back up to where the state average is about 4.2%. And see where the comprehensive plan has indeed created some issues. It's created a county that's a playground for the rich. So there's definitely some rework that needs to be done with both the comprehensive plan and the ordinances that support the comprehensive plan, because it's really turning our county into a playground for the rich. So yes, I think they, from what I've grown to find out here in my conversations, that they're justifiable terminations. They're trying to get the county back on track because it's gotten completely off track. And I actually agree with it.
You do. Okay.
I would rebut that, going back to what he said about the termination issues. I heard the same comments by the previous board when Rob Wakely was terminated from EMS. We have all we need. We're going to lose. They're going to lose. Rob was not going to prevail in court, which he obviously did. That settled here just not too long ago. And I can't comment on the amount that Rob Wakely got, but he used the term, I am extremely satisfied. And the commissioners still use the same thing. We've got him. We're not going to lose this. We're going to win. So I really have a problem with the credibility of the previous and existing boards. And there again, appreciate Mr. McDonald's comments on trusting the current board. But the things that I know of, and I still have a lot of people who help me stay aware of what's going on in the county, we're going to lose these suits. We're not going to win.
Well, the Wakely case, if you don't mind me jumping here, the Wakely case...
Yeah, about a minute.
Okay. The Wakely case was actually settled by the insurance company because it got to a point where it was pointless to go on, and so they just settled out of court. I don't know if you've dealt with insurance companies before, but that's pretty common practice. In these two cases, with Marley and with Carlson, I think it's going to be a slam dunk for the county. Again, I've spoken extensively to the commissioners. I haven't just relied on the B or even talking to Claire or Dan. I don't know Dan. I do know Claire. But it seems pretty obvious that this is going to be a slam dunk case, and they're not going to allow the insurance company to settle. So they're going to get the facts out. This board of commissioners just chooses not to try everything in the paper, which I think is wise. But the downside to it is a lot of people only hear one side, and all you've heard in the B are accusations.
Well, I didn't get my opinion from the B. I got it from other sources.
Okay, let me ask a follow-up question on this. We're kind of dialing down on the wrongful termination part mm-hmm. of it. But, Dan, you made a comment that I'd like to follow up on, that the comprehensive plan is kind of turning us or ushering us into a playground for the rich.
Sure.
So what specifically and the comprehensive plan was put together after a long process. And mm-hmm. Were you on board, Louis, when that
I was, chaired yeah. the board when yeah. that was happening.
That involved a lot of citizen input. Dan, what specifically in the county comprehensive plan do you think is impairing the ability of employers here?
Well, let me give you a couple of first of all, let me give you a couple of examples. I know of a couple that had before the comprehensive plan was put in place, bought a 10-acre parcel. They went to the planning and zoning. They said, "Listen, we want to buy this 10-acre parcel. Can we split it in the future?" And they said, "Absolutely, you can split it into 2 5s." So what they decided to do was build on 5 acres and save the other 5 acres for a later sale to fund their daughter's college education. Comprehensive plan comes in, changes the zoning requirements. Suddenly, they're on the hook for paying for their daughter's college education out of pocket because they can't sell this property. There's a gentleman over in Priest River who just completed 7 years of process and $37,000 just to split his own property in half. House up at Schweitzer, $2.8 million home, wanted to rebuild. The comprehensive plan, that he was denied his permit. The guy said, instead of fighting it, I know the general contractor, he said, "We're in the right, we can fight this." And he said, "Listen, I didn't come here to hire lawyers. I'll go build the house in Montana." So we lost not only construction work for a crew of 7 for a whole year and the $2.8 million that would have been spent in the community, but also the property tax that go along with that in perpetuity.
Okay. Louis, rebuttal on that one.
I can find a few examples like that where it didn't work the way I would hope it would work. And like I said in my opening comments, when we put this comprehensive plan together, I'm sure that I would relook at it if I was in office again, because there's things that didn't work the way we anticipated or intended that need to be changed. But describing Bonner County as a playground for the rich is not in my vocabulary. I don't agree with that. I've been involved, like I said, in Bonner County economics personally for 29 years, lived here for 36 years, have many friends within the agricultural community, many friends with rural acreages that are larger, and you get a feeling in a sense of what is good for the community by talking to those regular people in Bonner County, many of whom are native, many of whom have been in the agricultural industry in this area, which is a difficult industry because of our weather. And that viewpoint that Mr. McDonald has, I don't agree with.
Can I give another example? Just real quick.
Okay.
Kootenai County average home price, $147,000. Bonner County average home price, $238,000. Look at the unemployment differences between the two counties. Talk to people like Quest, who say, man, we'd love to move our suppliers, the people who supply us in here, and create more jobs, but we can't because of the restrictions in the comprehensive plan. There are a number. I mean, I've got examples. I probably have 100 examples that I could go on and on about. There's some real issues, but we have basically turned the county into, for the lack of a better description, a one big, huge homeowners association with a comprehensive plan.
So I have a question real quick. Considering that, Dan, you're saying that the comprehensive plan is creating an environment that kind of stifles things and makes it difficult. But what's going on at the Planning and Zoning Department, from what I have understood, and we've had several people in to talk about it, is that the answer, or is it to review and revise the current comprehensive plan, or just change the Planning and Zoning Department arbitrarily or really quickly or whatever? It's a big picture, and I understand that. But
I think it's multifold. So let's start with, the comprehensive plan. In fact, in the actual language of the comprehensive plan, it says this plan needs to be reviewed on a regular basis, which they're doing right now, and the commissioners are currently trying to make some of those changes. With regard to the Planning and Zoning Committee, where they're getting the rub is because the commissioners actually realigned the county with the state statutes with regards to appeals. About a month ago when they did this, appeals were costly. The gentleman in Priest River, $37,000 in 7 years to just split his property in half. They've changed that. They've made it easier, which is more user-friendly, which government's supposed to be for the people. And there's some pushback on that. They don't like the elected officials having the final say, which that's why we have elected officials. We don't want unelected bureaucrats deciding that I like you or I don't like you or you've rubbed me the wrong way. So therefore, what's going to happen is what we saw happening. And it's a feedback loop. And what the commissioners did before making this decision was they actually went through and did a test case. They gave something to Planning and Zoning. Planning and Zoning turned that project over to the P&Z committee, who turned around and threw it back to Planning and Zoning. And then it was this constant feedback loop. All the while, this property owner was able to do nothing, and it just kept costing them money. So there's where we are now and where we should be. And where we should be really isn't that far off, but it's going to take some real change in the way we do the process. And that and realigning the county with the state is another important aspect. And with respect to the comprehensive plan, the zoning changes acreage-wise are not aligned with the state at all either. So we've actually excluded ourselves from the state and made restrictions greater here than anywhere else in the state.
Louis?
I'm not sure I would agree with that statement either. A lot of the comprehensive plan was done under the advice of Jerry Mason, which is a very, very accomplished land use attorney that we use to coach us on building the comprehensive plan. There again, I'll reiterate, I agree it needs to be relooked at. There's things, but I haven't been there the last 4 years to accomplish that relook, and I would support that in a heartbeat. Because you can't know everything the first time you do something that's basically new. But I think that some of the control issues need to be modified. But a lot of the controls that are enforced through the comprehensive plan and what it states are very viable and need to stay.
Okay. Let's move on to another topic here. And this is a question that was emailed in to us, and it concerns roads. It's a little bit long, so I'm going to go ahead and read it here. Why do we paint our roads year after year? The paint seems to disappear every winter, making it a hazard at night, especially when it rains. In other municipalities with weather similar to ours, they use a heavy paint that is reflective. Isn't expensive to repaint every year? Couldn't that money be used better elsewhere? Okay, so a question about painting the roads. Second part of this question about roads is, The sodium sulfate used in winter for ice control eats metal and is very corrosive. Along with corrosion, animals seem to lick the sodium from the roads, and it collects in the middle of roads when there is this, where there is a seam, causing more collisions with animals. So two very specific questions about road maintenance. Can you address that? And then also, let's address a larger question. Do you think Bonner County is doing a good or at least an adequate job with its road maintenance? Dan, why don't you go first?
I actually agree with a lot of the statements made in the question that you just read. Part of it is you have to separate Bonner County versus ITD. So that's important. I agree. I think, and this is one of the things, again, that I'm going to look at. We're going to look at, listen, where are we spending our money? One of the things I do in my business right now is we look at life cycle costing. We look at sustainable design. And that'll be something that I will put through each and every one of our subgroups within the county to start looking at sustainable design, not just how do we fix today's problem, but how do we fix problems that last for quite some time. I agree. I don't like the sodium byproduct they use. I drive 60,000 miles a year right now, so I don't like coming to the county before they repaint. Mm-hmm.
Louis, roads.
Well, to deal with your first part of your question was the painting of the roads. The first issue is we don't have real paint anymore. When we had oil-based paints or solvent-based paints, the lifespan was many, many times what they are with water-based paints. These paints don't hold up. And we have liability issues if we don't paint these stripes. And I've heard many people say, why didn't you do that earlier? We can't see it. We're older. We can't see it. We want to know which side of the road we are on, which that philosophy kind of scares me that they're still out on the road. Also, I don't disagree with Dan with the issues of salt. Salts are corrosive, but the primary problem is the salts used on the highway. We use a different salt for the county roads as far as ice control, and it's a matter of economics, what we can afford to do. When we had sand and what I call three-quarter minus gravel on the highways and our roads, when you duck because the rock is big enough you can see it before it makes a ding in your windshield, that's a little spooky to me. And I also know many people in the commercial trucking business that are talking about the issues of the salts with their truck frames and suspension and so forth. And it's created, they said they'd rather have the rock things in the windshield rather than what it's doing to their trucking business. As far as basic philosophy in Bonner County roads, we need to try to keep everything black, which is keep our paved roads maintained, don't lose them and return them to dirt roads. But the fact of the matter is, and I had this history lesson from people that have been involved in Bonner County roads for 30, 40, 70 years, the roads were primarily built to make ditches for the water to flow. They were never built properly. They don't have the base that they need. It's obviously this year we didn't have nearly as bad of a thaw creating the big mud issues. But when you build roads by taking material out of the sides of the roads for water drainage and make a road service out of it, and a primary example of fixing it right, I live right near the Shingle Mill Road. Thousands of yards of pit run went onto that road on top of fabric. That's one of the most well-built roads in Bonner County, but that's you know, not very many of them reflect that type of bill because we don't have the budget. Mm-hmm. I think that what we do with our road and bridge budget, we get a pretty good product out there. The biggest problem I had this year is we had way too many breakdowns of snowplow trucks because they're getting too old. We had good obsolescence replacement under Chuck Spickelmeyer, which they don't appear to be doing now, and I don't know what the reason is. I've not looked at the budget. But we're losing there. They should be systematically replaced so that they work when we need them.
Okay. Any rebuttal on that or?
No, I think to speak to the broke down snowplows is that's again part of that forward looking attitude that you go, listen, we've got a limited amount of time on this piece of equipment. My dad owns a paving and excavating company and he runs equipment. I grew up running equipment. You have to look at that equipment as an object that's going to eventually fail and plan ahead for it.
Mm-hmm. Depreciate it out.
Yeah, depreciate it out.
And I want to remind our listeners that this is the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show with hosts Chris and Susie. And we have with us this morning, our guests are Bonner County Commission Republican candidates for District 3, Dan McDonald and Louis Rich. Okay, let's turn to another hot button issue that came up a few months ago. It's kind of receded now, but it did kick up a large brouhaha, if you will, and that was the decision by the county commissioners to pass a resolution on Syrian refugee resettlement. There wasn't any specific proposal to relocate Syrian refugees in Bonner County, but the commissioners issued a resolution in support of Governor Butch Otter's call to halt refugee resettlement in Idaho. Do you support or oppose this resolution by the commissioners, and why? And Dan, you want to go first on that one?
Sure. I support the. First of all, let's back up a little bit. The county commissioners don't have the ability to bring refugees in. The city doesn't have the ability to bring refugees in. The governor, quite frankly, legally, doesn't have the ability to stop them or bring them in. So I think it was just trying to send a message. Now, when I first started looking at this, and I wrote a thing in the piece in the Reader about it, and I spoke at the city council meeting. If you're looking at it from a point of compassion, we can help 12 to 20 more refugees if we put them in adjoining countries in that area for every one that we bring here. So to me, it comes down to a logic and common sense thing. Why would we want to relocate them here where there's a different culture, a different language, nothing's the same, when we can put them in adjacent countries, especially Saudi Arabia, who's got a camp that'll hold 3 million people and it's vacant. And with Saudi Arabia's history, they really should be helping out here. So I look at it from more of a logic standpoint. We can help more if we keep them there. Let's help more. And let's not bring them here.
Okay. Louis, same question to you. Did you support or oppose the resolution that the county commissioners passed?
I don't know that those two words really, you know, I don't think I'd use either one of them. I think the governor drew a line in the sand that he really couldn't legally enforce to make a point. But my whole premise is, if the federal government cannot vet these people properly enough to know who they are before they let them in, and maybe these pictures that have been displayed about refugee groups, when there's that many males and very, very, very few women and children, and you can't vet them, I don't want them close to me. I want to know that I can check them out, find out who they are, and evidently the federal process won't do that adequately. So I don't want them here if I can't do that.
Okay. Next question, economy and job creation. We've talked about that a little bit as mm-hmm. pertains to planning, but they're always big issues of concern. Do you think this is an issue that the county commissioners can deal with, should spend resources dealing with? And if so, what specific actions would you advocate to improve the economy and jobs here? And Louis, why don't you go first on this one?
Well, I'll use a current thing where they're working on a tax reduction for Quest Aircraft with some expansion going on out there. Watched Quest Aircraft grow as a Christian-based company from its startup, and I think that if the commissioners can offer them a reduction in their taxes to get them to expand further, I support that. But very few things the commissioners in general can do can create jobs. I know in the past, before I was the commissioner, we had opportunities at one time to have an aluminum boat manufacturer locate here because of our water and a fantastic testing ground, and it got shut down, and I never did hear why, because to me that would make very good sense to have an industry like that. The boat industry, as far as aluminum boats, is pretty stable as far as I can tell, and it would have been a lot of higher paying jobs. And that's one of the reasons I back Quest and support them as much as I do. There's a lot of employment that's being done out there. It definitely better than average wages within Bonner County.
Okay. Same question to you, Dan. Economy and job creation. Should the county commissioners be working on ways to improve economy and jobs?
Yeah, absolutely. The commissioners can't create jobs, obviously, but what they can do is they can create the environment for job creation. Quest is a good example. I mean, they're trying to help Quest create the environment. I was just out at Wildwood Grilling out on Shingle Mill Road. The county commissioners have found a way to help them add new jobs. They employ about 55 people. They're looking to hire quite a few more. They can create the environment through tax incentives, through, again, going back and looking at the restrictions in the comprehensive plan to actually make it work out. And I think that's something that they need to be more proactive about.
Okay. Here's actually kind of a similar question. Education is an issue, and it doesn't fall squarely under the purview of the commissioners, but the commissioners do have a lot of influence on education. So here's two questions concerning education that will give voters perhaps some insight into your philosophy. The Lake Pontary School District is close to approving a master plan facility levy that voters would need to approve in a few months. The levy would raise about $55 million for facility maintenance, a number of schools, and replacement of the current middle school, as I understand it. Do you support or oppose the proposed levy? And then second question would be, North Idaho College currently has an outreach campus in Sandpoint. They're interested in growing that. And do you support the growth of NIC in Sandpoint, even if it comes down to possibly the need to create to include Bonner County NIC's taxing district, which we're not currently in the NIC taxing district? And Dan, why don't you start on those two questions?
Okay, I've walked through the middle school, and it's obviously in dire need of replacement. I mean, it's antiquated, it's old, it needs some help. I've had conversations with the head of the school board, Steve Youngdahl, and I said, listen, if you want to get this thing off the ground, you really have to create a justification. I work with 28 school districts now, and I'm actually on that side where I'm helping them pass measures when there's an actual need. So I think it's going to be incumbent upon them to make their case. And that's usually the first step in success. If they choose not to make the case, then they may have some issues. But again, I've identified the middle school as being an issue, needs to be replaced. There are some other needs around the county. They might be able to, if it were me, I probably would have ran the middle school and then run subsequent levies to try to do the other replacement on the other. Now, as far as NIC goes, they're one of my clients, by the way. They do get a lot of their funding from the state of Idaho. When it comes to facilities, construction, that typically comes through Division of Public Works. So there may not be a need to create a taxing district. U of I just did an expansion to Coeur d'Alene, as did LCSC, and that was all funded by, or mostly funded by the state of Idaho DPW.
Okay. Louis, same question to you.
I do support education. In fact, I had quite a number of local teachers that used to trade with me at my establishment when I was in business for myself. And the quality of our educators, as far as the teachers that I've known, is very high. And I am a former high school teacher myself. I enjoyed very much the NIC operations out on North Boyer involving agriculture before and while I was a county commissioner. Many of those projects seem to have gone by the wayside, and I'm not sure what the reason is because I've not been able to keep track of exactly why some of them went away. But education in general, I am supporter of that. But it's just one of the responsibilities of not so much local government. We don't get involved as local government supporting education. It's a state issue. And I think that the state legislature and the business part of it and the economics part of it, as far as the budget setting, I think that they've done everything they could. But we also enjoy a state that has to have a balanced budget. We can't just spend it because we want to. The county can't spend it because we want to. That's a state law, and I appreciate very much that law, having been a participant in Bonner County economics.
Lee, can I ask a follow-up question on that one? So on the question of the plant facility levy that's coming along, what are your feelings on that?
The only thing that I can say about that, because I've not looked at it in its entirety, is when we built a new high school, it failed a very few years later because of snow loads. What's wrong with this picture? So I want to see what they're proposing and what their reasons are, and what are we going to get? Are we going to get another high school that's a couple of years old and the snow squashes it? When old barns that you had assumed would have fallen down in a heartbeat compared to new construction, they're still there.
Yeah, and the high school is problematic in and of itself. My kids went to school there, and those interior classrooms, they have no windows. I mean, let alone the snow load. It's roofing's my issue, but let alone the snow load issues. The interior classrooms have no windows, and that's part of the education model is to have the ability for kids to look outside. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I should disclose my wife has worked for the school district for about 18 years. So, but it doesn't bias my opinion as far as the logical side of the next step in this process. So,
okay, let's turn to a couple of environmental issues. The current county commission has supported the designation of the Scotchman Peaks as a wilderness area. That's partly within Bonner County, partly within Montana, actually. Do you support or oppose that? And then second do you support or oppose the proposed Rock Creek mine in Montana, which has which is just 24 miles upstream from Lake Ponderé and has potential effects on water quality in Lake Ponderé? I think, Lou, you're first on this one.
First of all, I was involved not as an official officer, but as the county representative on the Scotchman's Peak project. I think it's a great project. And my only concerns were, and I believe I'm right in this perspective, is that somehow that we as the state of Idaho and Montana would lose control of that for any reason, such as we have with many of our national parks. I don't think that the average person realized the lack of control that we have over those parks that were created for the right reasons, and now we don't have control over them anymore. Another feel-good project in some ways was the Ponderé Bay Trail. I worked on that for years, too, as a county representative, and I supported that. The only thing I questioned was the real estate that the city purchased was way, way above the assessed rate. I don't understand how they did that, because as a person that's still operating on a board, an elected official, I can't do that as a fire commissioner. The Rock Creek Mine definitely has had plenty of media attention on both sides. And before I would form an opinion right now, I'd want to look at both sides again. Because one thing I would definitely be accused of, because I will never be an extremist. I don't care what you're talking about. Extremism doesn't go with my personality.
Okay, same couple of questions to you, Dan. Where are you on the Scotchman Peaks Wilderness Area and also the Rock Creek Mine?
You know, I'm actually for Scotchman's Peak, but the thing that where I get concerned when you get these set-asides is that the first thing you see is limited access. So, I mean, there's rules surrounding how many hikers can be on the trail at a given time, and I get concerned about the exclusion. If it's going to be a wilderness area that we're going to allow hiking in, then let's allow hiking. Let's open it for everybody. I mean, it raises the issue with handicapped people. I don't think they can build handicap ramps or elevators, but that's my only concern when it comes to wilderness areas, because I've been involved in other wilderness areas in other states, and I'm always sensitive to access. If it's the people's property, then the people should have access to it. With regard to Rock Creek, it's a tough one, only because we know we have to have mining. Look in the studio here. Everything you see, all this metal in here, it all came from a mine. But are there ways to do it that we can protect the environment and specifically protect our lake? I fish all the time. I mean, I'm a big fisherman. I bass fish, trout fish, and I don't want the lake to be polluted. So I think if they move forward with the right kind of holding facilities, with proper maintenance and proper assurances, then we're good. The problem is we can look at what happened in Colorado, where the EPA caused that big spill in a river. That was the oversight agency that's supposed to be stopping that, and they actually created that condition. So I think we tread lightly and move forward. I mean, I want to see the jobs. I want to see the ore come out because I want to be able to have microphones. but let's do so carefully.
Okay. Any rebuttal there or anything?
Well, I don't disagree with him. The only thing that I want to see, if the Rock Creek Mine goes through, regardless, is proper maintenance procedures and inspection procedures downstream. And not something that you like the issue back in Flint, Michigan on the water.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that stuff probably was known long before they changed the source of their mm-hmm. water. It wasn't just, boom, it just happened. And so I don't want things like that to be in the background. I want proper maintenance, proper inspection.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say, the nice thing about that is they can actually write in monitoring, which is important. It's the plus to this kind of a process is that you can accumulate all the data and go, listen, we want to add downstream monitoring. We want to add upstream monitoring. So they can actually know right away. And then be able to react to it. So,
well, and another issue on things like that is the Clagstone, the new Clagstone issue out there with Stinson Lumber and so forth. I find it easy to support that because a lot of the revenues that were derived from taxes are targeted taxes collected from ammunition and gun sales. And the primary resource that we'll use out there are hunters and fishermen. That's one of the main resources. And so I don't have any problem supporting that. I believe that's a no-brainer type of thing. If we can keep it from being overdeveloped and creating pollution because of development, good call.
Well, Dan, since we talked about Clagstone, do you have an opinion on that? And to give a little frame of references, this is a deal that was actually put together some years ago to create a conservation easement that will keep a large 10 or 12,000 acres, I think.
12,000.
12,000 acres undeveloped in the Clarkstone Meadows as timberland and also for other recreational purposes.
Okay. First issue is I have a problem with taxpayer money going to for-profit agencies. I don't care who it is, whether it's a lumber company, whether it's an oil company. I think that's wrong. If they want to sell the property, great. If they want to put it into an easement and sell it to a group, that's fantastic. The problem with the easement is that they're going to get $7 million from taxpayer dollars, not income tax, but as Louis said, targeted taxes. They're going to get another $2 million from the conservation company, and then they're actually devaluing the property by $3 million. The first thing we saw was limited access. Now, if it were me and I was writing the plan, I'd say, here's the deal. We have ecologically sensitive areas around the marsh, around the lake. Let's set those aside. The balance, if you're a hunter or a fisherman and you want to access a lot of these places, it's difficult to get in there. If you get in 5 miles and you shoot an elk, as many of our residents do, it's a long pack out. If you're handicapped, it's impossible. So we've eliminated the handicapped. We have a lot of veterans here in the county that are handicapped. They've been eliminated. We have handicapped folks that I let hunt on our property because they need to use motorized vehicles, but it eliminates that access. Secondly, Stimson still gets to log on the property, and they can in turn sell the property. And so my first question is, well, when you sell it, do we get our $7 million back as taxpayers? So that's my rub is really on the taxpayer funded side and on the access. And it's another 12,000 acres in our county that we already have 64% that is inaccessible.
Okay. Any follow up, Louis?
I still maintain that when you collect a tax from the sale of ammunition and guns to support things and projects just like this makes sense to me, because I candidly and forthrightly, you know, I live by the reserve form of maintenance of my budget. The county has reserve form, and it's governed by state laws, all the reserves that they can collect, but We cannot fund many projects that we have to do within the county every, you know, in 1 year's budget. Can't be done. So reserves are collected. They're limited by state law, and then they're spent in those areas. But we have there again, we have a previous board who took money from solid waste to pay for the juvenile detention center. After it was already agreed that we would borrow that money from that reserve and repay it, it was taken and used for a whole nother process. To me, that's wrong, about as wrong as you can get, to use a targeted reserve without paying it back and not have to pay it back. That doesn't make sense to me. I don't do that on my own, and I wouldn't do that for the county.
The other issue too, Chris, with regards to this, is that the commissioners weren't brought in the loop in the begin with. There's two clauses in federal statute anytime you're using taxpayer dollars it's called the coordination clause. And basically it offers local officials an equal seat at the table determining the outcome of whatever it is, whether it's a land use issue on federal lands or state lands, or in this case, taxpayer dollars being used to set up an easement. That was the other problem. In fact, I went to the hearing or the meeting, the commissioners meeting, and Fish and Game got up and several of the state entities got up and said, "We apologize. We should have brought you in. We understand the coordination clause. It was our mistake." I think if they would have started that way, we could potentially have a better outcome with more access, because these conservation easements aren't written in stone. They're negotiated. And I think we could have negotiated specific areas for vehicle access, because there's no vehicle access on this, no motorized vehicle. We could have set up specific vehicle access points, places that aren't allowed vehicle access, and then, of course, ecologically sensitive areas.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. So this is the KRFY Morning Show with Chris and Susie, and we're speaking again this morning with County Commission candidates Dan McDonald and Louis Rich. They're the District 3 Republican candidates. And I want to throw out a fast mention here that this is the first of five Wednesday morning shows that we're going to be covering local elections that are going to be decided in the primary. They're contested elections for the May 17th primary. Next Wednesday, we're going to be talking with the Idaho State Representative Legislative District 1B candidates, the Democrat candidates, because that's contested. That's Bob Vicarious and Stephen Howlett. On April 27th, that's the following Wednesday, we're going to be talking with the Bonner County Commissioner Republican candidates for District 2, Todd Sudik and Jeff Connolly. On May 4th, the following Wednesday, we have invited in the Idaho State Senate Legislative District 1 candidates, incumbent Sean Keel and Glenn Rohr. They're the Republican candidates again. And finally, on May 11th, our last in this series will be with the Bonner County Sheriff candidates, Republican candidates Darrell Wheeler and Terry Ford. And the county commission races and the sheriff race, again, are going to be decided in this election because there's no general election opponent in this.
Right.
So it's a very important primary election.
And part of the reason we're doing this is because if you're an informed voter, you can do a better job. And it's one of our privileges in this country.
It's a great service, by the way. Yeah. I appreciate what you guys do.
Yeah, we're great.
Can I make one more comment on the Gladstone issue? Because this is important that people know that.
Okay, go.
Claire Marley had a lot of information in her office regarding that very project because it has been ongoing for years.
And Claire's the planning director.
Right.
Modern County
Planning
Director.
Right, the contentious situation, they never asked. I left a bunch of material because I had no reason to take it home because I wasn't going to be involved with it directly anymore in my office. Evidently, whoever moved into my office didn't look at that stuff because it was in there.
Okay. We're going to be running out of time shortly here, but I'd like to dive in on maybe one, maybe two questions if we have time. We can't have a discussion with commissioner candidates and not talk about taxes. Do you feel that county has struck the correct balance between taxes and services? Candidates to this office often come in with a platform that they're going to reduce taxes. But if you do intend to reduce taxes, what specific services would you eliminate? And let's start with you, Dan. And really, only got about a minute.
Okay. First of all, I don't think we need to. I do want to reduce taxes. I don't think we need to reduce services. I've been going through Road and Bridge and some of the other departments and look at the way they work. There's a lot of efficiency that can be changed there. A lot of ways they do business that will actually create a more service friendly attitude. Because most of the complaints I hear from people seem to be about Road and Bridge. And I'm not sure why, but I know why, but. So there's a place we can save, but the other thing we do is we expand the tax base, and that's again going back to loosening up some of the regulations that we've had that have come through the ordinances and the comprehensive plan. We expand the base, we become more efficient, we can reduce taxes.
Okay, thank you, Louis. Same question to you. Do you intend to reduce taxes? If so, what specific services would you eliminate?
Well, I think there's always, you know, the ability of the commissioners, and I would support zero-based budgeting. We've never done that. We didn't do that while I was in there because it never got a 2 out of 3 vote to go that direction. But and I also think it's always good to try to define efficiencies within departments to try to save some money. But I think when you have expenditures that were done this last year, that weren't even in the budgets. Money was, I don't know where the money came from because I know how well managed it is from a standpoint of the clerk's office. And these there were remodeling projects and other things that were not budgeted. And all of a sudden they got big sums of money to do these things. And I'm going, where did they get this? That's monies that if I didn't need, I would return to the taxpayers in the form of tax cuts. I don't think there's any major cuts that can be done in any of the departments as far as saving tax money, but I also wonder why the county district is invited into 5 pieces of pie, as it were, and the task of the assessor's office is to reevaluate one of those 5 every 5 years. So every 5 years, there's a complete review of assessed values and so forth. They chose to almost not go with any of the increases in value up in the upper Pack River area. So basically, everybody else is paying their fair share, but that area, and this is probably not going to win me any votes from the people who live there, but they're not paying their fair share. Hmm. And the state defines how this process has to be done, and Mr. Clemens definitely stays within those guidelines, wasn't too happy with the commissioners shooting down the process.
Okay. And with that, we're just about out of time. I would like, however, to give you each 30 seconds to a minute just to make a final statement. And Louis, why don't we start with you? Anything you'd like to tell the voters in about a minute before they make up their mind on who they're going to vote for?
Well, I think you've heard about a lot of my issues that I have with the previous and this current board. If you want to return to transparent business meetings, which is a problem when I first became in office, far too many decisions other than routine business votes, there's no discussion before they do that. I don't know how you do that without talking behind closed doors, which is not what our consumers and taxpayers deserve. That I'll work to fix that right off the bat. And as far as there again, the employment situation within the county right now is so volatile and so unstable. I mean, they're not happy. They're worried. Not only the wrongful terminations, but also the fact that all the department heads are now at-will employees doesn't make sense to me.
Okay, thank you. That's Louis Rich, candidate for Bonner County Commission District 3. Dan McDonald, final statement, please.
Okay. One of the things, I am a big fan of transparency, and I've actually gone to the Tuesday commissioner meetings and realized there was another meeting on Monday that where all the decisions were discussed, and then the decision was actually made at the Tuesday meeting. So, but one of the things I really don't care for is that the meetings are during the day. For the people that are working, the 93% of people in Bonner County that are working, they don't get a chance to voice their opinion. So one of the things I'm going to implement is we're going to have on a regular basis an open house, especially when we have big issues that come up, to where the citizens come in and say, hey, listen, this is the direction I want the county to go. The county should be driven by their very citizens. They should be driving government. They should be telling us, listen, this is what we want. This is what we want to do. So we'll have regular meetings that allow people to come in and voice those opinions. And if you want to find out more information on me, you can get to you can go to my Facebook page if you're on Facebook at Dan, the number 4, Bonner County. Or you can go to my website at, and this is all lowercase, one word, danmcdonald.net.
Okay, thank you. Dan McDonald, Louis Rich, again, thank you for coming in and
speaking with us. Appreciate the interaction. Thank you
very much. Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity.
We're very glad that you joined us today on the KRFY Morning Show at 88.5. This is listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. You can tune in tomorrow at 8 o'clock for the Thursday edition. And Jack Peterson, his guest will be Michelle Murphy and Dion Heller with Food for Our Children. And I just want to remind our listeners really quickly, the Little Smokies Bluegrass Band will be playing at the Panada, a KRFY benefit concert. That is May 6th. Save the date. We want to fill the Panada for KRFY. This is our radio station, community radio. We're going to go out with a Little Smokies song. This is called California. We hope you have a beautiful day.
Yes, bye now.